Our first case for argument this morning is Sanchez-Rodriguez v. Holder, appeal number 09-1023. Mr. Sipley.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Sabia Sadiq, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez. Your Honors, in this case, we first have to decide whether or not we even have a conviction here, which makes Mr. Rodriguez deportable from the United States and inadmissible for adjustment of status. Now, we know that Mr. Rodriguez pleaded guilty and was given 710 probation. However, on September 10, 1999, pursuant to the state's attorney's motion, his plea of guilty was withdrawn, and the proceedings were dismissed and discharged against him. By the act of having his plea of guilty withdrawn, he no longer had a conviction at that point. The proper analysis for the board and the IJ was to have made then was to decide whether or not the government sustained and satisfied its burden to show that Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez had a conviction against him and that he remained removable from the United States. Where do we turn at that point? On September 10, 1999, the first point of analysis would be to go to the definition of what is a conviction. We have to look to the statute. 8 U.S.C. 1101A48A requires that for there to be a conviction, there has to be a formal judgment of guilty. At that point in 1999, there was no longer a formal judgment of guilt, and the government continued to have that burden of establishing that Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez was removable from the United States. The IJ and the board were required, in order to determine what effect to give to this 1999 court order, again to look to the statute first. Let's decide, does he still have a conviction? In fact, in July 2003, during the first remand by the Board of Immigration Appeals, the board remanded on this basis to the immigration judge. The board remand order said that the basis for the remand is that the state court order reflected that Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez no longer had a guilty plea, and that guilty plea was withdrawn. At that remanded hearing then before the immigration judge mistakenly went into an analysis of this court's decision in Gill without even first discussing what effect the withdrawal of the guilty plea had on Mr. Sanchez, on the ultimate issue of whether we even have a conviction here. Your Honors, we posit to this court that when the state court permitted Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez to withdraw his guilty plea, this case then fell out of the realm and the analysis of Gill. Now, even if we were to analyze this case under Sandoval and Pickering, we must give effect first to the fact that the state court allowed Mr. Sanchez the opportunity to withdraw his guilty plea. In Pickering, the board has said that it will look to the law under which the criminal court issued its order and the terms of the order itself, as well as the reasons presented by the respondent in requesting that the court vacate the conviction. But let's first realize that in this unique factual situation that we have here, this is not your traditional post-conviction petition motion that was analyzed in Pickering and Sandoval and in Cota Vargas. This was a situation, again, as I stated earlier, that the state court, upon motion by the state's attorney, permitted Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez to withdraw his guilty plea. So even if we do look at Pickering, however, and we go beyond the issue of whether or not the conviction issue has been resolved, and again, we posit it has not been, we don't know in this case whether or not the Illinois State Court allowed Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez to withdraw his plea of guilty because there may have been some defect in the underlying criminal proceeding or on some other meritorious basis.
But when you look at the timing of how this all happened, I mean, wasn't it just the two-year period when he was allowed to have it vacated that the motion was filed? And there was no allegation that there was a procedural or substantive defect.
Yes, Your Honor, we would agree that the order from the state court in 1999 does follow 2 years. It was submitted initially at the behest of the probation officer. However, what's important is that that order had the language of allowing Mr. Sanchez Rodriguez to withdraw his plea of guilty. The Illinois State 710 statute does not have a provision which allows an individual to withdraw his plea of guilty. It simply indicates in subsection F that upon successful completion, proceedings are dismissed, the individual is discharged and proceedings are dismissed against the person. We don't have that situation here. If that was a situation, then yes, this would be a straight Gill analysis. But that's not what occurred here. So yes, the timing does reflect that the initial 1997 conviction at that point was deferred. However, what happened in 1999 is very significant in this case, and we must give some effect to the state court's order. Pickering requires us to do that. The board acknowledges. This court in Sandoval also acknowledged that we must go through that analysis. And when the board remanded the case, for the first time as well as for the second time after the Cota Vargas decision, it required the IJ as the fact finder in order to make a determination to conduct a hearing where evidence could be presented to determine what was the purpose of this 1990 court order. And the board specifically stated in 2003 that we need to determine what effect the withdrawal of the guilty plea has upon the ultimate issue in this case. And we would say again that the ultimate issue in this case is there still a conviction? Again, to go into as far as the reasons for the 1999 court order, we simply don't know. So it's mere speculation.
Well, that court order may reference specifically to Section 710.
The judge's decision simply indicates that, and I'm just going to pull it here, the defendant's plea of guilty is withdrawn. These proceedings are dismissed and the defendant is discharged. It doesn't say that it's pursuant to Section 710, the 710 statute. In fact, even the motion of the state's attorney just indicates that the state moves that the defendant be allowed to withdraw the plea of guilty. Now, the application of the probation officer references Section 10, but the motion by the state's attorney, as well as the ultimate order, does not reference
Section 10. Well, doesn't the criminal court record refer to Section 710?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The criminal court record refers to Section 710?
The criminal court record concerning the 1997 initial deferred adjudication of guilt, yes, refers
but the,
to
But
section.
The criminal record dated September 10th, 1999, doesn't refer to Section 710?
Your Honor, from my understanding, it does not. And again, that's one of the problems we have in this case, that there is, you know, what this court alluded to in Sandoval, that there may be some sort of defect in this court order here. But there was never any fact-finding permitted by the immigration judge when that judge had a duty to do so, especially given the government's burden in this case, to first establish removability. Yes, we have the burden to establish that he's not inadmissible for adjustment of status purposes, but we first need to establish, is he even removable from the United States? And the facts in this case, Your Honor, it's a unique set of circumstances and facts, which, again, we would state puts this case out of a traditional Ali v. Ashcroft and Pickering analysis. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Zanfordino.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Zanfordino on behalf of the respondent. This case is not unique.
Can you tell me why, or explain why, he pleads guilty in 1997 in state court and is ordered removed in 1999, I believe, the first time. So it's over 10 years ago. How can the system operate like this, that takes so long to get things done, one way or the other?
For the delay, either. So here we are in 2009.
Here we are. 12 and a half years after he pled guilty in state court, 10 years after he was initially ordered removed, and then this thing bounces around, and here we are at the tail end of 2009 dealing with this case.
Your Honor, I suspect a lot of answers I have for you are not going to be very satisfactory, and it speaks more to the volume of cases that are in the immigration system. And when cases, especially when they're sent to immigration court, there in particular, cases experience a great delay from the minute where they're remanded to where they're recalled again. Not so much necessarily in criminal cases, and especially not in detained cases, but in your run-of-the-mill immigration cases, you have a tremendous delay. And here, where the board had remanded it twice back to the immigration judge based on submissions of petitioner, it extends matters more. It is symptomatic of the volume of cases of immigration cases in general that the immigration courts are faced with. I honestly wish I had a better answer for Your Honor on that front, but unfortunately, it is hopefully becoming much more the exception than the rule that the court will see.
Well, I don't know if it's the exception. It seems like we see a lot of cases like this, and I mean, this guy's been here a long, long time. When did he first?
He first entered the United States in June 1988, Your Honor.
Okay. So as a visitor. Now he's been here 21 years, and I mean, he shouldn't have done passing out some marijuana here. That's not a good thing, but it's not. Didn't murder anybody or anything, you know. It just doesn't seem like he's that awful a person that the government ought to be trying to kick out after he's been here this long.
I understand Your Honor's point, and in this case, he did was convicted of delivery of marijuana within 9 years of coming to the United States as a visitor. And that set him into the process, and that's where the case starts to stretch and stretch, and we see more of these. I do hope that the delays start to reduce. In the asylum context, you'll note that, of course, sometimes what they're describing are events that took place years and years ago as well, and so that tends to stretch out the immigration process.
The basis for seeking political asylum go back to when you were in your country of origin, but here we've got this pretty simple state court case that he pleads guilty to a marijuana charge, and it's one of these, you keep yourself clean for 2 years and we vacate your plea so you don't have a record. And I understand you might still have a conviction for immigration purposes here, but it just seems like...
It is, Your Honor, and unfortunately, when the DHS, which case the DHS chooses to enforce against, I know they're trying to obviously focus more on aliens with criminal convictions, but this is an old case, Your Honor, and I certainly understand that, and unfortunately, that's more of a larger symptomatic problem than I can repair.
I know you did create the problem.
No, but and my only reference to asylum before, Your Honor, was only to explain that we will still see some cases that date back, hopefully in the criminal context we'll see less cases like this with a delay. In certain cases regarding sexual abuse of a minor, the DHS has sought to go after individuals with potentially old convictions because they've decided that they want aliens who have sexual abuse of a minor convictions to be removed. And so for a while there we were seeing a spate of convictions that dated quite a ways back. But that's more for the DHS at this point to choose where they're going. And I wish we didn't have to present cases that did date back this far. But again, in terms of this case itself, these facts are not unique. The statute, the rehabilitative statute that petitioner employed here, which was Section 710, is nearly word for word identical with the section that was used in the Gill case, Section 410. They're both rehabilitative schemes. Congress itself defined conviction. It's a two-step process, and it's conviction in terms of the INA, what it means to have a conviction if you're within the bounds of the INA. You either pled guilty or adjudicated guilty, one or the other, and there was some sort of restraint of liberty placed. Both factors were met here because, and as this court stated in the Ali decision, for instance, with an individual who has a controlled substance conviction, a person who's convicted under the terms of the INA of a controlled substance conviction, which occurred any time after admission, and the court in Ali pointed that out, that as the definition of conviction stood, the alien in that case had been convicted within the definition of the INA at some point after admission. Now,
before you go on, I just want to, 710, there was reference made in the probation officer's report in 99, but wasn't it also made, a reference was made to it in the criminal record?
Yes, Your Honor, that's at record page 550. Yeah. In the plea colloquy itself, they come out and say, I think they did 7-10, but mm-hmm. the implication was it was section 710. It's right there at 550.
And there was no other basis cited in 99 for
No, you're right. Process. It looked like any other run-of-the-mill first offender. We're going to give you 2 years, and they did, nearly to the day. In fact, it would have been 2 years exactly if it had not been for a Saturday.
So there was no need for the court to do further analysis.
It was by the book.
Not the analysis.
This court has affirmed the board's Pickering decision, and the board in Pickering noted that the critical question here is, and the board's Pickering decision, of course, cited other circuit courts as well, was the vacation of the conviction done because there was some sort of showing of innocence? Was there some sort of showing of substantive or procedural due process of a violation of those? It distinguished in Pickering cases where there was a defect in the substantive or procedural due process and actual rehabilitative scheme. What we have here in the plea, in the actual pages 562 to 563 of the record, the actual plea colloquy Your Honor referenced, and also the record itself, this was an application of the probation officer pursuant to Section 710, which was, of course, also done earlier in 1997, to say essentially that the petitioner in this case had completed all the terms of his probation, and at least as far as the state of Illinois was concerned, that they were going to vacate his conviction. But, of course, Congress has defined conviction differently. Also, when the board remanded it back, the board did not remand the matter and instruct to hold a hearing. The board, at record page 448, and forgive me while I just double-check, record page 448, stated that it was remanding the record to allow the immigration judge to hear arguments, because while the matter had been pending at the board, it was petitioner who submitted the conviction records and the records of the vacation of the plea. It was petitioner who submitted the plea colloquy. It was petitioner who submitted the application of the probation officer withdrawing the plea. The board, as an appellate body, threw up its hands and said, let's send this back to the immigration judge and hear argument. So, again, this is not a unique matter. This case, the statute involved here virtually is identical to Gill. Furthermore, this court in Ali, at footnote 4, noted that the procedural methods aren't the critical question so much as was it done for a rehabilitative scheme. whether it was done for a procedural defect or substantive defect. There's no indication of that here. This was a by-the-book withdrawal of a plea for a first-time offender, which this Court has in Gill and Ali affirmed the Board's views in matter of Roldan and matter of Pickering. This Court in Sandoval pointed to a specific statute that criminal convicted individuals could use to try and withdraw a plea because of substantive defects. That statute was not used here. I see I'm about to end my time. If there are any further questions, I'm happy to entertain them. Thank you, Your Honor.
1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honors. We would ask this Court, let's go back to the definition of conviction, okay? The significance of the 1999 court order, which is outside, which is unique in that it's not a traditional 710 analysis. The withdrawal of the plea of guilty must be given some effect. Otherwise, essentially, immigration judges are looking behind a state court's order. And in Pickering, the Board specifically has said that that analysis is not to take place. As far as Ali, again, the Ali case, in this court, it was a situation where the alien had petitioned for post-conviction relief. And the issue was the sentence modification at that point. We don't have that situation in this case. It's simply not present. So all we're left to go back, which should have been done back when the Board remanded it in the first instance in 2003, is to determine, do we still have that conviction? And Judge Evans, as far as your concerns concerning the remand and the delay in this proceeding, yes, Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez has been in the United States as a visitor since 1988. He's still married to his U.S. citizen wife. They have three U.S. citizen children. If we look through the records and the facts of this case, which are outlined in our brief, you will see that that delay in proceedings was not on Mr. Sanchez-Rodriguez's terms. He was not the one who initiated those. For the reasons stated, Your Honor, we request that our petition for review be granted. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement. We'll